Welcome to My IELTS Classroom, the podcast where two English experts talk all things IELTS. I'm Shelley Cornick.
And I'm Nick Long.
And today we are looking at a general training reading test. What will you be expected to understand in part two of a general training reading test? Is there some common lexis you can learn that will help you? And how will Nick and I attempt a specific part two from Cambridge 16? Good evening, Nick.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very tired. Been a very, very busy week this week.
A very busy week. But Someone's going on holiday next week, which is why we're recording this early. Are you looking forward to your holiday?
Well, by the time people are listening to this, I will already be on holiday. So
yes,
I am looking forward to it. It's only 4 days, but it's going to be a nice sort of chance to relax and walk around and enjoy slightly cooler weather.
Yes, I also think just going somewhere different is sometimes the break that your brain needs, right? Even if it's not for a huge amount of time.
Yeah.
I've got the pleasure. I'm going away this weekend, but unfortunately, I've been called in an emergency by my sister to go and babysit my three nieces and nephews for two days on my own. So I've got, it will be me with three children and four cats. Mm. So wish me luck, Nick, is all I can say.
Auntie Shelley.
Auntie Shelley. It's exactly that. Did I ever tell you about the time one Christmas when my when my niece said to me, Auntie Shelley, why did you come to visit if you're going to work all the time? And my little heart broke. So I'm going to try not to work this weekend. But we are working now because today we are going to be looking at, I think, a kind of under-discussed part of the IELTS exam, right? Mm. I think that we all kind of focus for the general training reading on maybe the third passage.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that's the sort of longer passage. Mm-hmm. It's the passage where we can have, you know, a wider range of questions, headings, multiple choice, that kind of stuff. But I actually think that students can struggle quite a lot in parts one and part two. Mm-hmm. And maybe more importantly, they could maybe make errors in these parts, which could be avoided.
Yeah.
With just a little bit of guidance and some, you know, good training, not even necessarily a lot of training, mm-hmm. but just understanding what's expected in those sections and making sure you're accurate with your answers. I think that's the key. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look not at the first part of the reading test, because the first part we have looked at before is the part which tests your ability to kind of function in the real world. So you might have to read, what would you read in the first part? Maybe like adverts for some products.
Kind of, like informational pieces or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, like like a notice maybe for some sort of photography course that you
Housing
could join.
Association or something like that.
Yes, exactly. So we're not going to look at that part. We're going to look at the second text. Mm-hmm. Now, the second text is still testing your ability to function in the real world, but now most of the time it's a text that focuses on employment.
Yes.
Occasionally it might be something about migration, because remember, every general training student is migrating, but most of the time you are going to have two texts which focus on a different aspect of the working world. So, you know, off the top of my head, Nick, you work with me because you do a lot of the teaching for our general training module. The type of text that you're going to have to read here, the first ones that come to my head are kind of the texts which are advice about getting a job. So it might be a text about, you know, how to write a good CV, or where to find a job, or how to update your skills to find a job, that type of thing. So it's sort of advice about getting a job. What other types of work text might we have here?
There might even be adverts for jobs or for a job.
Yes. Definitely. Right. So it might be a description of the job and what's expected of you. Another really common one is, which I actually think is genuinely quite useful, because, you know, if you go abroad, you're going to want a job. Once you get that job, it's really important that you understand the contract that you sign.
True. Yes.
Particularly in terms of the working conditions. So, you know, how your pay will be structured, the type of leave you can take. That is a classic type of text for this second part.
Mm-hmm.
What else could we see here?
I think there's a lot of texts that are often about advice for how to be a better employee or a better manager or something like that.
Yes. So not just advice about how to get a job, but once you've got that job, how to be good. I remember there's definitely one I remember about timekeeping. So how to
time
sort of
management,
like,
things like that.
Mm-hmm. How to delegate, how to make your working day more enjoyable, I think is a new one in Cambridge 16. But basically sort of advice that's going to make your working life a bit easier. And then the other one, I guess, which is a bit more, what's the word, technical, is that just like the texts, which are a bit like a contract, you might also have some sort of text that focus on health and safety.
Oh.
So how to do your job safely.
Yeah.
So these texts, I guess I would call them a little bit dry.
Yeah, they're not the most exciting, are they?
No, because as you said before, they're informational, right? So they're not very sexy or exciting. However, if you are going to take the general training test, I do think the good thing about this part of the exam is that it's predictable.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't know exactly which type of text you're going to get about employment or the working world, but we do know that you're going to get two. So I do think it's a really good idea before you sit the exam that you arm yourself with some basic vocabulary about the working world, which repeats a lot and is often the basis, particularly for true, false, not given questions, or essentially language you're going to need to answer the questions well. So what I've done, now this is not a full set of the vocabulary that you need, but what I thought I'd do is I just sort of give some examples of some of the basic language that I think every general training student should know before they sit the exam. So if we're talking about jobs, Nick, what is the one most important thing about any job?
The pay, of course.
The money, right? So they often talk about money in these texts. What words could we have, you know, general words or vocabulary in terms of money at work?
Wages, salary, wage. Yes. It can be plural or singular.
Yes.
I guess. Pay, income.
Yes. I mean, all of those things essentially mean the same thing, don't they? Right? Your income, your pay. I don't know. Do you remember teaching advanced English file where there was a nice, I really actually like, there's a great vocabulary page
about
the
money.
Back of that
yeah,
book
it's great.
About
yeah.
money. What is the difference? Can you remember? Because they explain it in that page. What is the difference between a wage and a salary?
I can't remember, but I'm going to guess salary is usually per annum, isn't it? So it's your yearly rate, and wages are what you receive in your bank account every month or whatever, right?
And they're usually calculated per hour.
Per hour.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think Nick used a really good term then. Per annum means every year. So if you've got a salary, it means, you know, it doesn't matter what happens, you're going to get that amount of money, the same amount every month, basically. So usually good jobs pay a salary, but you used to work for Pizza Express.
I did.
Used to work for a pub. I'm proud of that. When I worked in the pub, I didn't have a salary. I was paid per hour. So I used to receive wages.
Wages, yeah.
Yeah. So I think you need to know, I mean, that's just basic vocabulary for pay. Then, you know, particularly for the texts which talk about contracts, they often sort of test your knowledge of different types of employment terms.
They do.
So if you apply for a job and you get the job and it's yours forever, what type of job would that be? A bad job.
it would be an unrealistic job. I don't think those types of jobs exist anymore. Maybe it would be full-time, permanent.
Yes.
Yeah.
So permanent means, you know, there's not an end date.
To
very
the
often now, though, it's not permanent. It's short term, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you need to understand the difference between a permanent long term job and a short term job. As Nick said, full time would usually be like 35 hours a week, 40 hours a week.
I think, yeah, it's, I don't know exactly what the maximum hours are in the UK anymore. I think it's 38 or 39.
Yeah.
But a full-time job is going up towards that. So it's like 35 to 39. And then if you want to work more than 39 hours, you have to sign a special contract now. Sort
Do
of,
you?
Yeah. Because the last time I worked in the UK about 5 years ago, I was willing to work more than 40 hours a week and I had to sign a special waiver or something.
And what would we call those extra hours that you work?
Overtime.
Yes. So that's another good word. Mm-hmm. Nick's a very hard worker. Yeah. So we could have part-time versus full-time. Mm-hmm. You could have a permanent job versus a contract. Mm-hmm. There's overtime. I guess there's also the type of worker you are. So, you know, if you're working for a company, you're employed, mm-hmm. but you could also be self-employed.
Yep.
A freelancer. That's mm-hmm. another word. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, I guess how you leave a job, that's another thing, actually. Mm-hmm. So let's imagine that, I don't know, our student numbers drop, Nick, and unfortunately we don't have any students anymore. Mm-hmm. I would have to say to you, I'm really sorry, but I don't have any work for you. Mm-hmm. How would we describe what's happened there? Would you be fired?
No. Well, hopefully not, unless I said something horrendous.
Well, what does fired mean? Yeah.
Fired means that your boss has decided that he doesn't or she doesn't want you in this company anymore and you need to leave.
Probably because you've done something wrong, mm-hmm. right? So you've like insulted a student or you've mm-hmm. stolen some money or something mm-hmm. like that. But when there's just not any work anymore, what's the term for that
somebody is made redundant, to make someone yes. redundant.
To be made redundant. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you leave a job, this is other language they might test, right? Mm-hmm. You might be fired or the English version sacked. Mm-hmm. You may be made redundant. What happened, Nick, if you just decided you just wanted to leave and take another job? What would you do then?
I would just quit, I guess.
Yeah, quit mm-hmm. or resign.
Resign. Synonym, by the way, for made redundant, laid off, to be laid off.
That is a good one.
But I don't know, is that a bit too informal maybe for this type of text, do you think?
It might be, but it depends. Maybe in the advice, like, so the contract type of text.
They wouldn't say that, would it?
They wouldn't say that. But when they're giving the advice, like, mm-hmm. there may be a text like what to do if you've lost your job. Mm-hmm. And in that advice text, they may say if you've been laid off. Mm-hmm. And probably they would use in the question redundant, so they mm-hmm. would check you understood.
The meaning, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess the other way that you could leave your job is just, you know, eventually when you're 60 or 65, or you're very rich, you can retire mm-hmm. and become a pensioner.
Yes.
So that's useful language. I think other useful language as well are the types of leave mm-hmm. that you can have. So when there's a period of time when you're not working, mm-hmm. Nick, what type of leave can you think of? Obviously, the most obvious one is when we have a holiday. What would that one be called?
Well, that's called annual leave. I think in the UK, it's 28 days of the year. In a year, you're allowed.
Yes.
Sometimes it's called holiday leave as well.
Yeah. So yeah. Holiday leave or annual leave, that's mm-hmm. just your time when you can go off, mm-hmm. take a break. What other types of leave are there?
Well, maternity leave is probably the most common type, I guess, outside of that. When a woman's having a baby, if a man's mm-hmm. wife or partner is having a baby, paternity leave also. Mm-hmm. Not all companies give paternity leave, but some do.
Yeah, I mean, maternity is usually mm-hmm. what you get, but there is also paternity, and I imagine IELTS might use that.
They might.
Sick leave, I guess, is, you know, if you're mm-hmm. ill. Mm-hmm. Carer's leave, so if you need to look after a parent or a child who is mm-hmm. sick, that's another type of leave.
Long service leave.
Yes, I had that at the university. Amazing. If you've been working somewhere for 10 years, for example, you sometimes get an extra 3-month holiday or something like that. Mm-hmm. These are words, a lot of these that I've seen tested, right? You need to recognize when it talks about long service leave, that means somebody's been working continuously for a company.
For a long time. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I guess is important, I mean, these are kind of maybe a bit easier, but, you know, a lot of work or employment requires you to wear a special type of dress or clothing. Mm-hmm. So what words can we think of that might be used in terms of description of clothes?
Formal is the most obvious one. If you work in a bank, for example, you have to dress formally.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have, like if you work in IT, the dress code might be casual. So you can wear t-shirts opposite. And shorts, for example. Some places even have a smart casual dress code, which is kind of halfway to formal, but a bit more relaxed, I guess.
It's tricky, smart casual. It's like jeans with a shirt, maybe.
Jeans with a shirt. No tie needed.
Right. And if you're going to wear trainers, maybe sort of smart trainers, not sports trainers, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yes, smart casual. That's a good one.
As you said, I used to work in Pizza Express and we had a uniform. I had my waiter's uniform.
Yeah. Yes. And I guess with the health and safety, there might be some descriptions of particular protective clothing that you might need to wear, mm-hmm. like a helmet or maybe reflective clothing or a visor or something like that. So that's useful language. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, as you're practicing part two, you know, I think a lot of the time I'm guilty of this. I like to do everything quickly. Okay. So what I would probably do is I would answer a set of questions and then think, okay, finished, next. But I think what you could do is, because a lot of these texts use not extremely legal language, but certainly formal language that's got specific meanings, I would, as you're practicing the Cambridge books, start, you know, have a little book where you're collecting this legal language, which is often the basis for questions. So, for example, you know, I just had a look at a couple of texts, and these are some of the words that I've pulled out, which I think, okay, these could trick a student. So the first word is exempt. So, for example, it might say, those over 65 are exempt from the policy. What does that mean in that sentence, Nick?
Not exempt. Included.
Yes. So if you're over 65, the policy does not refer to you. That's the kind of word where if you don't know what exempt means,
it can make it very tricky, actually, can't it?
It could make it tricky, particularly for a true, false, not given question, right? It might say something like, pensioners must follow the policy. If you don't know what exempt means, you don't know that the answer is false. Claim, that's a common word. So here's the sentence. You can claim for maternity leave using form C86. What does claim mean there?
I get, in this context, it's more to do with money, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah.
Like claim something. It's not claim like they claimed that, blah, 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 which is more about sort of
opinion,
saying something that is true. But yeah, if you really claim in this context, yeah, you can claim a bonus if you work 40 hours overtime or something like that. It means you can get, you can receive, kind of, doesn't it?
It's about receiving. I guess it means that usually in English, if there's a benefit and you are able to take that benefit,
you
we would use claim as the verb. So you can claim. Often we use it for a prize as well, don't you? Someone's won a prize, but they need to go and get it. So you need to claim your prize at reception, for example. Proof. I mean, this is a kind of maybe less difficult word, but again, you know, you will need proof of address. What does proof mean in that sentence?
Evidence, I guess.
Yeah, evidence, right?
I mean, so, these two are quite often sort of used as paraphrases of each other, aren't they? Synonyms of each other. So if in the question it says evidence, in the text it will probably say proof or prove, and vice versa.
Exactly. That's what they like, is they like these pairs of words which they can just switch. Another phrase that I saw, again, you know, this might not be useful for every employment question, but if you don't know what this means, I think you might struggle to answer a question. So it's staff retention. So it'd be, you know, a sentence would be, staff retention is very important in our company. What does staff retention mean, Nick?
Staff retention is something that I have battled with quite a lot when I used to work in restaurants, including Pizza Express. So staff retention is how long the people who work there stay for. So if someone stays in the company for, or if lots of people stay in the company for a long time, then they have high staff retention. If people come work for 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, and then just quit, then we would say they have low staff retention or high staff turnover.
Oh, and that could be the opposite.
That could be the opposite.
Exactly. Good. So, you know, again, do you see what I'm trying to say? Like, these are very specific words which are used in an employment context. You want to build up your understanding and knowledge of these phrases, because once you've got them, I think it becomes a lot easier. Consent was another word, right? So something like, your company needs your consent to film you at work. What does consent mean? That might be a difficult word
it
for
is,
some students.
But it's got another pair, like proof and evidence. Probably the pair for this one would be permission.
Oh, nice. Yes, that's a perfect synonym. So again, yeah, the you need to give your permission for the company to be able to film you. Perfect. So these are lots of words which I just think, again, build up the bank. There are also some words which I just think, you know, they may not appear in again and again. The language like pay, carer's leave, maternity leave, claim, proof. They do repeat. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, some questions will just rely on one random piece of vocabulary. These are usually the most difficult questions. Mm-hmm. A good example that I found of this in one text I was looking at was confined space. Mm-hmm. So I think the sentence there was, you will need to work in, or you will need to be able to work in a confined space. Mm-hmm. So what does confined space mean?
Not suitable for claustrophobes.
Yes, exactly.
So it's a very, like, how could we describe it? A tight space.
Small space.
Small space.
Usually with no sort of like air. So it would be like working in a box, for example, I guess, or like working in the attic of a house would be a confined space. That's the type of thing where if you just don't know what that means, you might struggle.
You might struggle, yeah.
To be able to answer a question. But I do think that much of the vocabulary in this section, even though the actual text change, there is definitely core vocabulary, which is repeated again and again.
For sure.
So make sure you are going into the exam with a good knowledge of that lexis. And if, you know, if nothing else, if you are going to just be doing lots of Cambridge tests to practice, don't do that. If you are, at least be gathering this language and, you know, and making sure you understand what it means, because it does repeat. In terms of the questions, Nick, that we get in this part two, obviously a lot of the questions that we focus on are the questions, as we said before, for part three, headings, multiple choice. We're not going to see those here. What do we tend to get in part two?
I think in part two, you almost always seem to have one completion activity.
Yes.
Whether that's notes or a table or a flowchart. So you'll get like the full text in the reading task, and then you'll have a summary of it, or not a summary, but notes of that, or vice versa even sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can have like the text is actually sort of notes, and then you have to fill out a flowchart based on those notes.
Yes, or something like that. For a flowchart, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I actually think, and the ones that we're going to do today, we've got two types of completion activities. They do seem to be, at the moment, the favourites for part two. They seem to be putting true, false, not given in part one, where you've got the sort of general life information text, and then they're putting note completion in part two. Who knows? They may start changing that back again. I do think that, though, a completion activity, a true, false, not given activity, and also sometimes just short answer
questions are very popular.
They tend to be what you're going to get in part two. So, you know, that's it. But as we'll see today, there are places where students can go wrong with this. So what we're going to do today is we're going to be looking at a section two from Cambridge 16. But Nick, I can't for the life of me remember which test it is. I'm pretty sure it's test one. All right. But if it's not, forgive me. I've just forgotten because I'm old and I'm tired. Okay. So the first text that we're going to look at is the heading says reducing injuries on the farm. Obviously, that's the first thing you should do, right? Yeah. You definitely want to read the heading before you do anything else. So this is obviously some sort of text. I guess it's one of the health and safety texts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So particularly on a farm. Now, if you happen to be a farm worker, you're definitely going to have an advantage in this. And what we have here to answer here is a completion activity. And the completion activity is a table. Thought we'd do a table to make it a little bit different. So for any completion activity, so we're going to do this together. Obviously, you can find these texts on our website. If you're going to play with us, go and download the text now. Just go to blog.myieltsclassroom.com, or if you're listening on your phone, have a scroll down into the show notes for the podcast. I'll put a link there, so you can just click on that and get taken to download the text. Let's just have then, so we'll do some of these together and some on our own, but let's just talk about best practice first, all right? So for any type of completion activity, I guess the first thing we always want to check, Nick, is what?
Well, the first thing we should check, very, very first thing, is we should check the title of the text to understand what it's about, which we've done. Then we should check how many words we can use in the gaps.
Yes. So for this one, it's just one word.
One right? word.
So that's mm-hmm. pretty easy. Now, the good thing about tables is that they kind of give us a clue to the structure of the text.
They do.
So for any table, now this may sound kind of obvious, but you know, our job is to make sure everybody understands everything. For a table, for this table, we've got three vertical columns, okay? So the first column says risk factor.
Right.
In that first column, essentially, that is, I guess, the headings for certain sections, isn't it, of the passage. So we've got three, think of them really as mini headings. We've got heavy loads, awkward posture, and a lot of something while working. Nick, what order will we find those in the text? This is basic, but let's...
We'll find heavy loads first, then awkward posture, and then a lot of something while working.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, what you might want to do is, you know, if you're a good reader, you might just want to have a very quick scan of the text, not to read it, but just to think, where am I looking? Where are these sections? So, you know, if we just look at this very, very short text, we've got four paragraphs. Where do you think the information about heavy loads will probably come?
It's going to come in the second one, because I think that first paragraph is just a sort of very basic and simple introduction.
I agree.
We can even ignore it, probably, to be honest.
So, exactly. So we've got an introduction. And then if I just look, even very quickly, in this first one, you can see excessive load. It's in that first line. So obviously, we're going to be looking for question 15 in that first paragraph. I guess then we'll find awkward posture in the next paragraph. And I can see it there immediately.
Second line.
Second line. So that's telling me, before I've even read it, where are we going to find question 19?
Final paragraph.
In the final paragraph. So I already know, okay, that's how the paragraphs have been organized. I haven't read anything. This is just something you can do at the beginning to sort of pre-reading to make the easy reading easier. The second column over then says examples of farm activities. And then risk reduction. I guess in each of those paragraphs, we're going to find the examples before the risk reduction. Do you
think? That would make sense.
So if we know that the first of that is quite a long paragraph, that first paragraph is all about heavy loads. And we're only looking for one question in this paragraph, aren't we?
We are.
One example of farm activities for heavy loads, which is lifting sacks of something.
Sacks.
Once we have found the sacks, do we need to read the rest of that paragraph?
I would say no if we're fairly confident that we've got the answer.
If we've got the answer for number 15, I think we could then ignore the rest of that paragraph because we know that the posture is in paragraph two.
Exactly. So I will say though, if you think you've found the answer, that's good. If you're not a confident reader though, you might want to read and just find the rest of the information because you've got another example and then you've got two more risks. But if you're feeling super confident, then yes. Choose the word and then just move on to the next paragraph. Save as much time as possible.
Now, I would say, so I totally agree with Nick, right? Reading more is always better, is always safer than reading less. A lot of students make mistakes because they jump in and they think they've got the answer. My instinct is saying where students might go wrong here is that we've got two examples of farm activities, right? Lifting sacks of something and carrying food for animals. A reader who doesn't read carefully could maybe confuse the information, right? So you want to make sure, because you could easily say lifting sacks of food.
You could, which is the same as carrying food, isn't it?
Which is the same as carrying food. So what I would say is when you look at this, as you've got two examples there, as Nick says, you want to sort of like eliminate one. So as you're reading, you want to think, is this the example of carrying food for animals or is this the other example? Because I'm looking for the other example. Good. In terms of actually locating the answers, I guess for any completion activity, what we really want to do is, I mean, how are we going to know when we're in the right place to find the answer, Nick? What's going to tell us, ding, 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 the answer is here?
Well, we're probably going to see synonyms
of
lifting sacks, basically, I think, for the first one.
Yeah. So you want to find, as soon as you start finding, well, first of all, you want to see something that shows you're reading the examples, so mm-hmm. for the heading. Mm-hmm. Then you want to find a synonym for lift or sacks. You may find the information about carrying food for animals first. If you're reading about carrying food for animals, that's also telling you you're in the right place. You mm-hmm. want to be looking for synonyms. Once you find those synonyms, then what you want to do is you just want to make sure the one word you choose definitely fits the space.
Yes.
Grammatically, that's the key thing, mm-hmm. right? So it's got to fit the space grammatically. And as I've just mentioned, you've got to also make sure you're not repeating any words that are printed on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to say lifting sacks of food.
Mm-hmm.
And also are not repeating synonyms for words on the page. So mm-hmm. if, you know, maybe it says in the text, I don't know, carrying grain for pigs. Grain for pigs is food
for, yeah, for food.
Yeah, mm-hmm. food for animals. So if you said lifting sacks of grain, you're still repeating mm-hmm. food. So it's not necessarily just the same word you don't want to repeat. You don't want to repeat words that have got the same meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we do this lifting sacks mm-hmm. together? So, I'll tell you what, for this first one, I'll read it. Okay, so as Nick said, I'm not going to read the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start with the sentence that says the first risk. So that's telling us risk factor. Okay, the first risk relates to, oh no, actually, Nick, do you want to read it?
Can do, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I won't read it. Nick's got a better voice. Nick, you read it.
The first risk relates to the carrying of an excessive load or weight. This places undue demands on the spine and can cause permanent damage. Examples of tasks that involve this risk are moving 50 kilogram fertilizer bags from one site to another or carrying heavy buckets of animal feed around fields.
Okay. I reckon.
You ready to stop?
Yeah, stop. So, they're being kind, aren't they?
Yes.
Because, you know, we need to find an example of farm tasks. What language did they say there, Nick?
Examples of tasks.
Examples of tasks. So they mm-hmm. clearly said, here come the examples. And there were two, weren't there?
There
moving
were.
50 kilogram fertilizer bags.
Yep.
Or carrying heavy buckets of animal feed.
Animal feed, food for animals. So our answer is obviously fertilizer bags. Fertilizer is an adjective in the text.
Yes.
So we can use that as a noun in the answer, lifting sacks of fertilizer.
Yeah. So well done, Nick. So obviously that we can only use one word here, can't we?
We can't say lifting right. sacks of bags. That doesn't really make sense.
Yes, you can't say sacks of bags, sacks of fertilizer. But if you could use two words,
mm-hmm.
this is where you would need to be careful because
yes.
you don't want to say lifting sacks of fertilizer bags.
Because bags is a synonym of sacks.
Sacks. So mm-hmm. it's sacks of fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Now we found that, mm-hmm. as confident readers, I would now be moving
yeah.
to paragraph number two because... Mm-hmm. We already know that the risks, the rest of that paragraph is going to give the risks,
which
are already
mm-hmm.
in the table. So let's have a look. We'll do this one again together. So mm-hmm. now we know that the risk is awkward posture.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking for the two examples. So this might be slightly more tricky.
Mm.
So we've got lifting a restless
something.
Beep. Mm-hmm. What does restless mean?
Restless, it's like not calm.
Something moving, isn't
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they've got moving something around a big
okay.
beep. So not moving something big, but moving something around a big, I'm guessing something like obstacle.
Obstacle,
right?
Some kind, yeah.
So there's mm-hmm. something in your way that you have to go around. Okay. Let's read this one then, Nick.
Okay.
And we'll stop when we think we've found the answers.
If a load is bulky or hard to grasp, such as a lively or agitated animal, it will be more difficult to hold while lifting and carrying.
Stop.
Stop, yeah. So lively and agitated are very, very good synonyms of restless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that one, the answer is definitely lifting a restless
animal.
Mm-hmm. Now, this one's more difficult because it didn't say examples of tasks, did it?
No.
But there was still a signifier that this was an example. Mm-hmm. What was that?
Such as.
It just said such as. So mm-hmm. such as a lively or agitated animal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's keep going.
The holder may adopt an awkward posture, which is tiring and increases the risk of injury. Sometimes a load has to be held away from the body because there is a large obstacle in the area.
Stop!
Well done. Obstacle
I
is
promise
our...
I didn't read it. Yeah. I could guess it. It is an obstacle.
Moving
isn't
something
it?
Around a big obstacle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well done.
But actually, how would the student know that? Because let's keep going, because there is a lot has to be held away from the body because there's a large obstacle in the area, and the person lifting needs to be able to see where their feet is going.
Feet are going.
Are going. Mm. Yeah, that's quite hard. I'm not sure where the
tricky.
Around
there's
is.
There's no
there.
Around there, is there? Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. I mean, there's the big and large, which are synonyms. Mm-hmm. But I think from context, you have to understand that you go around an obstacle. So it's kind of checking
can't
your understanding.
Go through it, can you?
No, of the collocation. Mm. Okay, so they're the examples. Now we need to find the risk reduction measure. Mm-hmm. So here it says buy, B-U-Y, like make
purchase.
A purchase. Mm-hmm. Buy particular something to help with support.
So I'm going to guess shoes.
Shoes.
Or Wellingtons, okay, we'll see.
Hat to help with support. I don't know. No, I think shoes is perfect. Let's see what we've got.
All right. So this results in increased stress on the back. Holding a load at arm's length imposes about 5 times the stress of a close to the body position. In such cases, handling aids should be purchased that can take the weight off the load and minimize the potential for injury. So shoes is not the answer.
No.
Seems to be aids here.
It is aids. Now that, I think, is what I would classify as a more difficult answer.
It is a difficult answer,
it doesn't look like a very specific word, does it? Mm. It's not shoes or something like that. It just says handling aids, but it does say should be purchased.
It does.
And our question says by particular, so that's the only word that fits. Mm. Okay, good.
And that can take the weight off, I guess, is to help with support, isn't it? Yeah, that's the...
Exactly, yeah. So there are definite synonyms in there. Mm. Let's have a look then at question 19. I wonder if this will be more difficult, because now what we're looking for is the summary of the risk. Mm-hmm. So it just says a lot of something while working. So we don't know what it is. And the example we're looking for is when we're fixing a fallen tree.
Something.
What could fall?
Yeah. Fixing a fallen, I guess tree would be a good one. Fence, maybe.
Pig. Fence, yeah. Something like that. So it needs you look in here for something that collocates. A lot of these questions test your understanding of what words work together. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for something that could fall. But anyway, first we've got to find out what this risk factor is. So there's a lot of something while working. So
another risk that relates to awkward posture is repetitive bending when carrying out a task. So there we go. A lot of bending while working.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, oh, here we go. An example.
Oh, yeah, we've got the example straight away. An example might be repairing a gate that has collapsed onto the ground. So we've got repairing is a synonym for fixing.
Yeah.
And collapsed onto the ground, a synonym for fallen. So fixing a fallen gate, I guess, would be the correct answer here.
I think that's definitely the answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Done. Finished. Move on. Mm-hmm. So I actually think... the good thing in general about parts one and part two is that a lot of our reading texts, particularly if it's note completion, have got headings, right? Mm-hmm. And they help you understand when, you know, you're able to move forward and leave parts of the text without reading it, right? Yep. Because it's like, I finished that section or all the questions in that section, I now need to move to the next heading.
Yep.
We would definitely never do this in part three.
No, God, no.
In part three,
you read
well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're reading everything or you're putting at risk. Not an injury, but you're putting at risk losing some points.
Yes.
But I do think in parts one and two, when you've got these headings or when you've got these tables, you know when a section's finished, you can confidently leave parts of the text unread. Mm-hmm. And that is something you should be aiming towards if you are a strong reader.
If you're a strong reader, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to give you more time for the more difficult part three, which you will need to read everything. But again, it's all just about using good, solid reading skills. Mm-hmm. We knew that we could leave the majority of the first paragraph because we'd found that first example. And before we'd read, we'd done a pre-reading that we just understood where each of these sections started and finished, mm-hmm. right? Heavy loads in paragraph 2, awkward posture in paragraph 3, the third mystery risk factor, which we now know is bending, in the final paragraph. That's what the type of thing you should be doing if you're a strong reader. Think about the organization. That can help save you time.
Yes.
Okay, brilliant. So let's do the second section then, the second passage in this particular test. Now we have the very interesting,
good customer service in retail. Does it really exist?
Well, Nick, this is why I chose this test, because you are Mr. Retail. Mm. So we're going to be looking at what it means to have good customer service. So this time we've got another completion activity.
Uh-huh.
However, it's not a table.
Nope.
So unfortunately, we can't sort of pre-read and maybe understand the text organization. Mm-hmm. It's also not note completion. So we've got no headings to help us.
Yeah.
It's just sentence completion. Mm-hmm. We've got, what have we got there? Seven sentences that we need to complete. So again, that's going to make it more difficult because we can't, I guess, skip sections and we've got nothing to guide us
to
where to read. The good news is the questions always appear in the same order mm-hmm. as the text. So we do know that the first one we need to look for is question 21.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no headings here or no, you know, columns in a table to help us. What else might make this one slightly more difficult, Nick?
I think what might make it more difficult, we've got quite short paragraphs here, actually.
Yes.
Well, a couple of them are quite a bit longer, but a lot of them are very short. And there's really nothing to help us at all. Like, we've got simple sentences in the questions and we've got smallish paragraphs with no headings, nothing in the text.
Nothing in the text. And yeah, exactly. The other thing I think is quite key here is that we're now not looking for one word.
No. Ah, okay. Yes, I see what you mean. Two words.
We're looking for two words, mm-hmm. right? Just because it says no more than two words, mm-hmm. it does not mean every question needs two words.
No, it means at least one of them will have two words, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think for every question you need to use two words. The other thing is that if you do think you need two words, make sure the two words you choose are together in the passage.
Mm-hmm.
So if, I don't know, this is a silly example, but if it says old grey elephant,
mm-hmm.
you can have grey elephant because they're together or old grey, mm-hmm. but you can't have old elephant.
Because grey's in the middle of them.
Because grey is separating those words in mm-hmm. the passage. You've got to find two words together.
Back to back.
Back to back is a great expression there. Mm-hmm. Now, what I think is going to be difficult here then
mm-hmm.
is maybe finding, you know, if there's more than one word, but also I think for these type of questions, we want to be really careful that we're not making that mistake of repeating something which is already written in the sentence.
Yeah.
So not necessarily a word, but a synonym for a word which is already written in our sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we know, the questions will appear in order. We only really need to focus on the first question as we start.
Mm-hmm.
So it says, a something approach to selling is fine as long as you do not irritate the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, as we start reading, we're going to be looking for synonyms to help us know that we're in the right place. Looking at that sentence, Nick, what might be the one word there that would be the easiest to find a synonym for?
Probably irritate.
I think irritate. That mm-hmm. is a very specific word, isn't mm-hmm. it? And so irritate, what would be a synonym of irritate?
Annoy,
right? Mm-hmm. So I would be focusing on the word that's going to be easiest to find a synonym for.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we have a read and mm-hmm. then we'll think about how to find this answer.
Okay, so from the first paragraph, without customers, your retail business would not exist. It stands to reason, therefore, that how you treat your customers has a direct impact on your profit margins. So nothing in this first paragraph.
No.
Some customers just want to browse and not be bothered by sales staff.
Mm-hmm.
Try to be sensitive to how much help a customer wants. Be proactive in offering help without being annoying. So there we've got the word annoying.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. We've actually got two synonyms there, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
bothered by.
Bothered by. Mm-hmm.
And annoying. So definitely our answer.
Somewhere here.
Is in this area. Mm-hmm. So now this is where you want to think really carefully, because what we're looking for here is a type of approach.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an adjective.
Yes. So mm-hmm. an approach to selling is fine as long as you do not irritate the customer. So let's have a look again. Some customers just want to browse and not be bothered by self-start.
So in that first sentence, there's no adjectives. There's nothing here.
No. Try to be sensitive mm-hmm. to how much help a customer wants. Mm-hmm. Be proactive in offering help without being annoying.
So the answer is going to be...
So we've got, as you said, we need an adjective here, mm-hmm. don't we? Mm-hmm. So we've got two adjectives, sensitive, mm-hmm. proactive. It could also, I mean, could, so of those two,
yep.
would sensitive or proactive work best?
Well, proactive, in that I think, yeah. Because that, yes. that's what's coupled together with without being annoying. So
as long as mm-hmm. you do not irritate the customer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, could you hear, mm-hmm. it says, be proactive in offering help. Mm-hmm. Could you say offering help approach?
No, because it's a.
It's a, yeah. not an.
Yeah.
Yes.
We couldn't say a offering help approach.
And also, mm-hmm. just in terms of language, I mean, I don't think there is such a thing. As you said, we need an adjective here, don't we? Like, yep. you could say offering help approach, and I'd kind of understand, but you'd be more likely to say helpful approach.
Yes, you would.
With mm-hmm. the adjective. Mm-hmm. So I think there we've got definitely need proactive. But I think there's quite a lot you had to understand in that puzzle. Mm-hmm. You had to match irritate with annoy. You had to understand that this was a good approach if you don't annoy. Mm-hmm. And you had to understand that you need an adjective. Mm-hmm. Okay. So question 22, this one says, recommend additional products and beep something without being too forceful. Mm-hmm. So for this one, it says recommend additional products and. So I guess in the text, we're going to find a synonym.
Well, there'll be two things and one of them will be a synonym for additional products, yes.
So what we want to be careful of mm-hmm. is that if it said, I don't know, extra, what would be like extra items, for example?
Mm-hmm. Something like that, yeah.
We don't want to write extra items as mm-hmm. the answer because then we'd be repeating. So we want to find the other thing apart from additional products. So why don't we, let's keep reading this one.
Okay. Suggest a product that naturally accompanies what the customer is considering, or point out products for which there are special offers, but don't pressure a customer into buying an item they don't want. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So don't pressure a customer into buying an item they don't want. What's that a synonym for, Nick?
Without being too forceful.
Yeah. So we're mm-hmm. in the right place. Mm-hmm. So apart from additional products, what else could we recommend?
The answer, I think, is special offers here.
Yeah.
Because we've got naturally accompanies a product that naturally accompanies what the customer is considering is yeah. additional products.
Yes. And so suggest, it's a long paraphrase.
Recommend. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Suggest, recommend. And then it even says point out, which is another
synonym for recommend, isn't it? I guess yeah. kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe what we'll do now, Nick, is for these ones, because mm-hmm. we've sort of modeled the first two, mm-hmm. why don't we give our listeners a chance to answer the final five questions on their own. Mm-hmm. And then we will come back and check the answers together. So just be careful. We've already had special offers. So we've already got one answer that's two words. Mm-hmm. There may be no more.
Yep.
But whatever you choose for answer, just make sure it definitely completes the sentence grammatically and it's not, you're not repeating anything that's already there. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's have a check back. Nick and I have just done them. Some were actually quite tricky, Nick, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, definitely not easy. Definitely not easy.
No, you've got to sort of like hold everything that you're reading in your mind and kind of be thinking which one or two words finish these sentences mm-hmm. best. So question 23, I think, was all right.
It was all right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, know how to compare similar products which have different, what was the answer here?
Different brand names.
Yes. So, what were the synonyms that helped us?
So we've got products that are alike, similar products, and then which have different, have been produced under a range of.
Yeah, so range names. Of mm-hmm. is the synonym for brand names, for different.
For different. Mm-hmm.
That was okay. Question 24, I think we agree, is the most difficult.
Yeah, it is.
So we've got to avoid something by always saying more than no.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are, you've got to understand all of these sentences really to understand this. So it says, if you've run out of a particular item, make sure you know when the next orders are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Negativity can put customers off instantly.
Mm-hmm.
If a customer asks a question to which the answer is no, so there's the no,
mm-hmm.
don't just leave it at that. Follow it with a positive.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we're expecting more of that product in on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just scanned and found no, and then you kept reading...
Well, the answer's not in that sentence, is it?
It's not in that sentence. Where is the answer?
It's in the sentence before that sentence.
Yes. Because what we're trying to avoid when we say more than no...
is putting customers off.
Is putting customers off. But we can't use three words.
Mm-hmm.
So what summarizes putting customers off...
Negativity.
Is negativity. So mm-hmm. that is the only word that... completes that question. But if you, this is why I hate scanning, even in part, even, you know, we're not teaching you scanning, we're teaching you to read through and find the answers. But that's what you're trying to avoid when you follow a no with a positive, is negativity. Okay. Question 25. Keep an eye on the something of goods on the shelf. What are we keeping an eye on, Nick?
Keep an eye on the... So this one, 25, the answer we got was, this was a tough one as well, presentation. Yeah,
it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why was this one tough?
Because the answer, I mean, it was hard because of the synonyms, keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And again, we had the answer in a slightly different place from where the synonyms were.
Yes.
I think.
So the synonym, you know, keep an eye on,
mm-hmm.
the synonym would be if you see a product... in the wrong place on a shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the shelf and the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
Put it back where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of the words in that sentence fit our sentence 25.
They don't.
So it's like, what are we keeping an eye on?
Mm-hmm.
But then it says, this attention to presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the attention there...
is keep an eye on, basically.
Is keep an mm-hmm. eye on. And it's the presentation of goods that we need to watch.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, I know this is a classic one that they use where they have this at the beginning of a sentence.
Yes.
Referencing. And actually the previous one with if at the beginning of a sentence... if what? Well, you need to go back and read. If your sentence starts with this or with if, it's always a good idea definitely to read the previous sentence for more context.
Mm-hmm. That's really good advice. So I think 24 and 25 will take even quite good readers a few sort of seconds to understand
mm-hmm.
what piece of the puzzle fits in that space. 26 was maybe an easier question again.
Yeah. We predicted this one actually before we even read it, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because it's collocation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Problem paying. What do you usually have a problem paying with? Well, not really with cash. It's usually with a credit card or a bank card or a debit card. And it says in the text, when necessary, be discreet. For example, if the customer's credit card is declined at the till, so the till is where the customer pays.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Handle the problem with care. Keep your voice down. And inquire about an alternative payment method quietly so the customer doesn't feel humiliated.
Yeah. Good advice.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely there, if you're alert, there is only a limited number of things that you can pay with.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess declined is the problem.
And the answer's not going to be your soul, is it? So
no, exactly. And then the last one, again, any something from a customer should not affect how you treat them.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you can understand just from the sentence, it's going to be something negative, I think, right?
It should.
Because it shouldn't affect how you treat them. So mm-hmm. as I was reading at the end, we were trying to think, well, what could the customer do that may affect how you treat them?
Mm-hmm.
And where did we find the answer? Here.
It's in the second to last paragraph. It says, treat each person with respect at all times, even when you are faced with rudeness.
Yeah. So there's only two words that really fit there. One would be respect mm-hmm. and one would be rudeness. But if you think about the question...
Any respect from a customer should not affect how you treat them. You should just be rude to them all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not the respect that's going to affect them, but the rudeness might. So it's giving us some advice. So, yeah, I mean, I think here it's not easy, but if you just stay calm, read through, read everything, and don't treat these questions like a word puzzle, right? It's not a grammar puzzle. Nope. It's a meaning puzzle, right? So once you sort of think, well, what could affect how I treat a customer? It's got to be something negative. That's going to eliminate the word respect. Good. Okay, Nick, well done. I enjoyed doing that.
That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite fun.
To be on the other side for a change.
To be on the dark side with the students. No, we're on the bright side with the students. The dark side is being with the exam writers. I hope that you found this lesson useful. If you did, email Nick and I, let us know. We always enjoy hearing that we have helped you to improve, particularly maybe that vocabulary at the beginning. That may have been something new for some students. If you did... Maybe you'd like to think about reviewing us on Apple or Google Podcasts. That always helps us.
Very helpful, wouldn't it?
Very helpful. That will always spread the love and help new students find us. But in any case, whatever you do, just come back next week and we'll have a new lesson. And take care until then. Bye.
Bye.
My IELTS Classroom Podcast is a production of My IELTS Classroom Limited. Nick and I do not represent IELTS, and everything you heard in this episode is our own personal opinion. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on our blog. That's blog.myieltsclassroom.com. And if you're looking for our video courses, speaking lessons, and marking service, you can find that at www.myieltsclassroom.com. If you have a question or query or just want to chat, you can email Nick and I at hello@myieltsclassroom.com. Our theme music is by Heartbeat and our artwork is produced by David Brown. Have a great week, study hard, and remember, this is my IELTS classroom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.